from a federal perspective, we're going to move to a state perspective. The next two speakers are going to kind of tag team it. Steve Lee's been at MPCA since 1978, and in a bunch of different capacities: water enforcement, Superfund, hazardous waste, household hazardous waste, petroleum leak cleanup, spills, emergency response, emergency preparedness, brownfields, NRDA, and closed landfill programs. I think we should give him a hand just for that. And then Mike Kanner, similarly interesting experience at PCA, Strikeforce project with these great job descriptions: Strikeforce project manager, Strikeforce supervisor, Superfund supervisor, Superfund RCRA and brownfields programs manager, tanks program petrol remediation and redevelopment and ER manager, and closed landfill program manager. All right, Michael Kanner and Stephen Lee.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate the invite. This is a segment of the program that's old guys telling yarns. And some of the yarns I'll tell are based on fact and memory, and some of that memory is probably based on fact. So we'll see how it goes. My role at the agency, a lot of different things, but right now I'm kind of reduced to telling the new employee orientation, telling old fart stories to the new people. So, as John said, in the late 70s and early 80s in the national scene, there was the Love Canal, there was the Valley of the Drums, there was a deadly dioxin in Times Beach, Missouri. Those are sites that were on the national news every night. They were picturesque, they had good names, and they had people that were affected, picturesque people that were affected. In Minnesota, in the mid-1970s, in an area of St. Louis Park called Skunk Hollow, it came to be understood that there was creosote-contaminated soil, and the wells in the city were tainted by creosote. On the bicentennial night of 1976, July 4th of 1976, the PCI incinerator in Shakopee caught fire. That incinerator had 28,000 drums in storage, and you could see across the South Metro, you could see barrels rocketing through the sky on that 4th of July night. That was really something. A company called Advanced Transformer had 1,000-plus drums of solidified resin, hard like a rock, they said. Those drums of hard resin got chased around the state of Wisconsin by the Wisconsin DNR from farm to grove of trees. Finally, somebody heard that there was a landfill in Minnesota that'll take anything, and they ended up at the Ironwood landfill in Spring Valley. And that lasted until citizens in the area, connected or not, saw dead cows along the creek. There was a child in the area that had alopecia totalis, that means no hair, and some of the pictures of those solidified resin drums came to light, and they were dripping gooey kind of stuff. At Oakdale, Jerry Stonke is part of the open dump inventory. Looking at an old open dump in Oakdale, saw that there were barrels in this dump. This just wasn't garbage. This was something different. And 3M Company stepped up and did investigations and removals of barrels in the late 70s. A lot of landfills with rumors and discoveries. Those landfills operated by people like Rotten Ronnie, Toothless Eddie, Lucky Schrammel. Arsenic bait was found around the state from the grasshopper infestation days of the Dust Bowl. A number of wood treaters with pentachlorophenol and creosote ponds, and some inventories. The Jim Hulbert survey of pits, ponds, and impoundments, and the open dump inventory that the agency had embarked on found hundreds of locations around the state where waste had been disposed, and nobody really understood the consequence of that. There was big media interest. It seemed like, these days, if it bleeds, it leads in the TV news. Back then, if it was a scary chemical story, it made it to the TV news. That poor, bald child in southeast Minnesota had more media exposure than, I don't know who's a pop star now, Britney Spears. Those gooey Ironwood drums were a common sight on the news. We had TV media people, I don't think their mothers called them this, but we called them like Scoop Hendricks, Channel 4, Armageddon Mitchell, Chipmunk Cheeks, were TV news reporters that made a living out of finding scary-sounding chemical dumps and getting them on the news. Tom Mearsman of the Tribune on the other hand, were pretty reasoned and good coverage. The news headlines in the late 70s and early 80s included PCA probes acid leak at 3M, hearing about the St. Louis Park groundwater, the judge won't dismiss Riley. Army denies Lake Superior barrel dumping. Go figure. EPA and PCA testing the Arrowhead refinery site. PCA investigates massive Heidelberger tire pile. Anybody remember Cecil Heidelberger? 24 sites on the PCA chemical list, PCA to excavate Spring Valley, and then in 1980, PCA forms the strike force. That was the agency's response. In November of 1980, we had a fairly inexperienced commissioner who some said was kind of afraid. There was a lot of media pressure, a lot of political pressure, about 20 sites on various lists, and she formed a group called the Strike Force. She plucked 10 people out of various places of the agency from the waste, solid waste, and water programs. Those staff were long on inspecting and short on and soil and kind of short on chemistry and lab understanding. It was Mike Ayers, Doug Day, Terry Kaysen, John Aho, Rick Ferguson, Diane Zaya, now Fox, Lisa Torvig, Steve Lee, Michael Kanner, Tim Schirkenbach, and Mike Hensel was working on the St. Louis Park case. The concept of the commissioner was pull these people together in a strike force, get these cases under control, take a few months or a year, and let's be done with this stuff. It didn't exactly work out. As an example of media interest, one of the lead stories on the TV news one night was movers moving Diane Zaya's desk from one place in the building to another as the strike force formed. Tim Schirkenbach, the boss, described it as a moving train wreck, trying to get cars back on the track as more cars kept leaving the track. And there was no particular authority or law that had to do with this. There was no budget. We had no contractors. The emergency budget for the agency was $4,000. Scoop Hendricks from Channel 4 would come in every morning to Tim Schirkenbach, the boss's desk, and interview Tim about what new cases may have come in overnight. And Diane Zaya, whenever she'd go off to the bathroom or take a break, Scoop would be at her desk looking for new sites, looking at the logs, seeing what he can find. The main tool back then really was the threat of a public thrashing, potential litigation, and we had really pretty good response by the big industrial players in the state, not so much from the schmucks. And just saying that a lot of companies did, in fact, step up and fix their problems, the Marvin Windows, the 3M at Oakdale, the FMC Vault, but that's not much fun to tell stories about, so... What's the fun of that? A hotline was set up and kept in a big three-ring binder by Diane Fox, and she took to taking that binder with her when she went to the bathroom to keep it out of the way of Scoop. It had 400 calls by 1982. Examples, our company couldn't get the garbage haulers to take the drums anymore, so we've been dumping them over the hill. Or our company did some borings in an old solvent disposal area. We're going to be doing some digging with the backhoe on Saturday so that the state won't find out about it. Another call, two cats have died and I don't feel so well myself. Another call, there was a wood treater across the highway. They had creosote ponds down in the low area. I'm willing to show you where. Another call, the Three Mile Island nuclear waste is coming to Minnesota in trucks. At a St. Paul factory, at a public meeting, two of the company officers during a break at the meeting were at the urinal in the men's room. They didn't take care and look to see if anybody was in the stall. And they said as they were at the urinal, they'd better not find what we buried underneath the high bridge. So that got onto the hotline. A week or so later, John Aho and I were drilling at that company site to see with the drill rig to see how deep oil contamination went, and our switchboard got a call. Tell your guys they're digging in the wrong place. Go to the high bridge yard. If you don't believe me, ask Louie. He buried him. That's not the real name, because Louie was deathly scared of getting killed. We found Louie, and we interviewed him. He denied knowing anything about burial of anything. But he went down to the furnace every couple of minutes, down to the basement to check the furnace. 10 trips down to the furnace after a bit. Every time he came up, he was a little bit more staggery, and finally he said, a drunken Louis said, "Boys, I know what you're after, and here's where we buried him." And he drew us a little map. And, you know, we can't go to the company with a drunken map, so I had to that night climb over the fence with my witching sticks. Darn it, I forgot them in the car. With my witching sticks, I witched out that barrel dump. And later we excavated it, just like Columbo. There was another site where an employee of a manufacturing plant had a hobby of going around to small town festivals with chariots, little chariots with ponies, and the kids would drive these chariots around. He made the chariots from 55-gallon drums. Those drums came from his employer. Trouble was, the drums came full of sludge and solvent, and he used that sludge and solvent to control weeds on the farm that his great-granddaddy had homesteaded. At the atomic plant in the Midway, the workers said on the hotline that every week they take our belts, our lighters, our shoes away from us. They put us in rubber boots, and we load barrels into a pickup truck, take it to the east side of the property, and dump it into a hole. Turned out that those were, when we found them, that was under a giant mountain of feets, which are the leftover from grinding up soybeans. Those are hexane barrels buried in the ground. Meetings that Doug Day, for example, had under the Fat Boy restaurant in North Mankato, meetings at the Clancy Drugstore and other dark places, because there were a lot of people. As the economy went and waned, people get laid off, they'd rat on the boss, and that's what the hotline was about. St. Louis Park called, people called and said, when it rains, the field next door sparkles at night. They also said that in the war, when the smoke would be pouring out of that building because they had a fire there, Army soldiers would meet the fire department at the door and turn the fire department away because of super secret Army research going on in there. Turned out to be a lithium milling operation that had been dumping waste in the field. A citizen named Cheryl Grudnosti up in Round Lake in Arden Hills told Kevin Faust, "You ought to ask the Army about Report 129. So Kevin did, and they gave it to him. And Report 129 had been commissioned by the Army several years before. They'd looked at a lot of Army bases to see what waste disposal practices had been. Report 129 was full of pictures of solvent dumps, depleted uranium dumps, pink water, which is ordnance kind of pink water and sludge, ordnance kinds of waste. And the conclusion of Report 129 was there was no evidence of off-site migration, therefore no further work needs to be done. We took a sample across the street, and we blew the gas chromatograph of the health department away with that. Another hotline report told us to look at Rainbow Falls by the Ford plant. That's where the paint booth went over Hidden Falls. Have you heard about Test Tube Hill? That was the University of Minnesota's lab waste dump. Check out the Devil's Liquor Pit at Copper's Coke. And my favorites, and I'm still looking for it, there were two reports of New Brighton, one dump that got loot from a bank robbery buried in the dump, thousands of dollars. Another one, there were crates of Army motorcycles packed in grease in this dump. And I've looked for those two things many times over the years. They're in my car. Dang it, I brought them today. One is named Sludge Seeker, the other one is Barrel Finder. So those are the tools of the trade. We had partners throughout the agency in the solid waste program, the spill program, the water program. We had lots of local inspectors, fire chiefs, public works. We had a good cadre at the Attorney General staff. The health department, drinking water, and lab staff. Our biggest tools were eyeballs and sticks because we did a lot of poking. You know, you come to a spot, you poke at it, you poke at the sludge, you poke at the drum, you poke at the sediment and see what happens. The witching sticks, and darn it, I was going to bring them and pull them out, but I personally witched out several pentachlorophenol sludge ponds, witched out a couple of barrel pits, and one of my favorites was witching out a buried abandoned well up by Twin Cities Army Ammunition Plant. Dan Berg, who's with the health department now, his first day on the job, was out digging out a well that I had witched. Now, Michael Cantor and or John Aho and I were in the car because it was a sleety, rainy day. But Dan Berg dug and dug and dug. Finally got down 4 feet, and he found a pistol. I was not calibrated right. I don't know what the deal was. Used a lot of air photos at the Borchert Map Library, kind of amateur air photo looking. Played a big deal in Oakdale, Isani, the wood treater ponds revealed by air photos. The Army up at TCAP commissioned a highfalutin air photo study of all the possible sources around TCAP that probably caused the contamination from TCAP. So we had to run down each of those possible sources that the Army air photos revealed, and they included Little Davy Yepma's tree fort, was one of them. Another one was the State Patrol Training Academy that was in place at a former pig farm next to TCAP. I thought that was kind of appropriate. In 1982, the new commissioner, Louis Breimer, said, "It's clear that Minnesota needs its own version of a superfund. Such a law would provide us with authority and resources to take fast, effective cleanup action without having to wait for courts to decide who should pay. In other words, act now, sue later. Then the contamination problems don't get worse while the attorneys argue." And so the Minnesota Environmental Response and Liability Act came in 1983, and Michael's going to talk about that. Some other memorables. I don't know what Doug Day's wearing today, but in the early 80s, he and Jerry Stonke were walking the Pollution Control PCI site in Shakopee in the hot sun, 28,000 drums hissing in the hot sun. Adam, when we got back home again, Doug Day's soles fell off of his wallaby shoes because of the plastic stitching dissolved. When I dug our first drum excavation, was me with a shovel digging out underneath the high bridge yard. When I got home, my wallaby shoes lost their soles. We were a fashionable bunch, I'll tell you that. the dead cows and the boy with the alopecia totalis really caught people's attention down in Spring Valley. One day, a neighbor came up to St. Paul with a dead squirrel, and he said, "Steve, I live next to the landfill. You know about that poor boy, and here is a bald squirrel." So we had to take the squirrel to the university, got an autopsy, died of a shotgun blast, of course, but but they said before death, this poor squirrel had mange. So that took care of that for a little bit. And then the next week he called, the same guy called, and he says, "Steve, you know that squirrel?" "Yeah." "Well, that squirrel, I had been looking at it, and that squirrel had black spots on its private parts." He didn't exactly say it that way. And he said, "And Steve, I've got black spots on my private parts." So we had to send him to the doctor, and the doctor said that's a normal part of male aging. Now, I wouldn't know, but you could ask Michael Cantor. The FMC site down by the river by the Minneapolis intake was discovered in a kind of an odd way. I thought to myself when I was doing the Spring Valley site that these people have a little bit of chlorinated stuff in their wells, just a little bit. And I knew that people that drink city water have chloroform and other trihalomethanes. As a result of chlorinating, you make some chloroform. So I thought I'd take a sample of my city water, take it down to Spring Valley, and say to these people, "You don't have it so bad. Most people have worse water than you." And I don't know why I thought that would make them feel better. But I did that. I took city water and I analyzed it, and it came back with trihalomethanes, but a touch of trichloroethylene in it too, which really got the health department wound up because that they hadn't seen that or noticed that before. And it got traced back to the storm sewer that discharges just upstream of the intake. And that storm sewer goes by the former factory that made naval guns and the solvent contaminated pits from that factory. Depleted uranium at TCAP was something that frightened me in particular. So when we went to TCAP, Lisa Thorvig, who's now a big deal at the agency, was a soil scientist then. When we went to TCAP, I always stood behind Lisa when we looked at the depleted uranium, because I figured, what better shield? And I had plans for a family. So The Isani drum cleanup was one of the first, was I think the first, federal Superfund big deal drum cleanup, 900 drums from a defunct solvent recycler. Was that Rocket Products? Terry True? The night before that cleanup was going to begin, a neighbor had trespassed on the site to look around at it and dropped in on the site. Of course, that created lots of media, lots of worry. Another time, Doug Day, visiting one of the landfills, actually going to visit Rotten Ronnie at the landfill, went into Ronnie's office. The chair was turned looking out the window with his back to the door. Doug knocked on the door, and the chair swung around, just like on The Voice. Chair swung around, and instead of Rotten Ronnie, it was the attorney known as Thunder. Doug shrieked like a little girlie. The other highlight to the program has been Michael Kanner receiving the estimate from a consultant for doing work for us. The estimate was a bit more than Michael thought. He tipped back like that on his chair and went butt over tea kettle. So that's my particular highlight from the Superfund program. So over the years, it's been gratifying. I moved on from that. It's been gratifying to see what Superfund and MRLA have accomplished in the state of Minnesota, but it's thought-provoking to ponder what hasn't been finished. As John said, you know, it's a job started. It's certainly not a job done, and it's a big job that we need to figure out how to get this job done. So old tales from the old days. Thank you.